Dedicated to the survival of American democracy in an increasingly dangerous world, this is Secure Freedom Radio with Frank Gaffney, acted as Assistant Secretary of Defense for International Security Policy under President Ronald Reagan, founder and president of the Center for Security Policy in Washington, D.C., the go-to man for defense and foreign policy issues, joined by the greatest minds in the security policy business, the special forces in the war of ideas at Secure Freedom Radio with Frank Gaffney.
Welcome to Secure Freedom Radio. This is Frank Gaffney, your host and guide for what I think of as an intelligence briefing on the war for the free world. I have, in the course of some 40 years working in the national security space, never encountered a man who has done quite as much in quite as many different capacities for the free world as has our guest for, I'm very pleased to say, this full hour. His name is John Guandolo. He is, among other things, a Naval Academy graduate, a former Force Recon Marine, a former SWAT team commander in the FBI, a former special agent in the FBI, and now serving his country in the private sector in an extraordinarily important and arguably unique way. He is engaged in a program he calls Understanding the Threat, which he founded and has been using to help train primarily, but not exclusively, members of the law enforcement community at all levels of our government to understand the nature of the threat posed to us by what I think of as Sharia supremacism and the jihad it commands its adherents to engage in. He is an extraordinary resource, and it is a great pleasure to have a chance to talk with him at length about the many areas of expertise he brings to bear on this war for the free world, and for his friendship as well. I'm delighted to welcome him back. John, thank you so much for taking a full hour with us to talk about things on your mind and mine. It's good to have you with us. Happy New Year.
Happy New Year. Absolutely great to be back with you on the radio show.
Well, good. Among other things, I want to congratulate you on launching your own television program. You take a minute to tell us about that, John.
Yes, well, we've got a 30-minute radio show on worldviewradio.com, but we have just recently launched at wvwtv.com this television show with myself and our vice president at Understanding the Threat, Chris Gobetz, who's the man who went undercover inside Hamas in the United States during business's care. And it's fantastic. We're essentially taking, we've got 12 episodes that are already locked in, and we're essentially walking people through how the Muslim Brotherhood came to the United States, what they're doing, and how they're doing it. So we hope people will tune in.
Well, this is a hugely important topic, and we're going to come to it in a moment. I do want to just, again, commend to you all the program at WVWTV.com, Understanding the Threat. But, John, before we turn to the jihad and the Muslim Brotherhood and its other practitioners here and abroad, I did want to pick your brain a little bit about the organization you served in for quite some time, the Federal Bureau of Investigation. It seems as though it's hit a rough patch, shall we say, and you've seen it and experienced what's been going on there for some time, going back, I think, to the Bush administration, if I'm not mistaken. Talk a little bit about what you've observed, particularly in the senior ranks of the Bureau, and how those who are lower down the food chain there are viewing the roles now coming to light played by Bob Mueller, James Comey, Peter Strzok, his lover, Ms. Page. And not least, of course, Andrew McCabe, until yesterday, the deputy director of the FBI.
Well, yeah, there's a lot to share there, but I just want to share a few pieces in answer to the question. First of all, I came into the FBI in 1996, and as a total sidebar, Andrew McCabe was in my new agent training class. He was actually our class speaker at graduation. So it's interesting as we watched careers move along, sad to see where the tack that he took. But I will say that even when I came in, and Louis Free was the director when I came in and took us through just right up before 9/11 is when Director Mueller came on board. And even then, you know, I can just share with you, a major organization in the D.C. area did an assessment at the Bureau's request on how it promoted leadership. And I will tell you that the response, the gentleman who honchoed this for a really big organization said, if we could create a way to promote people, that would be the worst possible way to do it. That's how you guys are doing it. So I think for a while leading up to this, there's been a history of the FBI promoting in many cases the wrong people for the wrong reasons. While at my experience is at the ground level, and in some leadership positions, there are people working very hard to protect the country. And so they're having to deal with the fact that the organization has just really been damaged by leaders who are not aggressive, and especially not aggressively pursuing real threats. And this is kind of what you get when you don't understand the threat and you've got the wrong people in positions of leadership.
Yeah. John, obviously there's a lot to parse there, but it sounds from what you're saying as though part of this is a culture within the management of the FBI, and partly it is, as you say, a function of having, as frankly have other entities in the U.S. government, particularly in previous administrations, but to some extent even in this one, not properly comprehended the nature or even the magnitude of the threat we're facing from this phenomenon, this totalitarian agenda that, as Andrew McCarthy calls it, Sharia supremacism. Let's start with the management piece of it, if we can, John, because, again, the kind of people that we're now reading so much about, the kind of people who evidently feature prominently in this report that the House Intelligence Committee is evidently going to be releasing shortly, all point to, well, I've called it politicization of the Bureau. Is that an apt way to describe it or think of it, or is there more to it than that?
Well, I think that's it's not a wrong way to look at it at all, but I think there's more to it than that. I think there's so much to hit on. Let me just hit on a couple quick points. Number one, inside the FBI, you mentioned, you know, there's a lack of professionalism because of the fact the leaders don't train to know what they're supposed to know. You know, as I actually have shared before on this show, at least in a snippet, you know, if we just look at the counterintelligence side that should be dealing with a lot of this stuff, you know, it's a 4-week program at Quantico, Virginia, for an FBI agent to become a counterintelligence agent. I mean, when you compare that to China, Russia, and really European nations, that's incredibly juvenile. They spend years training people to become counterintelligence officers and agents. And when you look at the counterterrorism side, when I was at in the FBI, I literally proposed in detail an 18-month training program for people who come into the Bureau before they even get to their specialty, because there are things the average agent lacks.
And how did that work out, John?
Well, that, you know, the guy I was talking to was the number 3 guy in the FBI. And he just said, you know, who's going to pay for this? And the question is, do we want to be professional and be able to do counterintelligence and counterterrorism, which are linked? They're not separate, which in the Bureau today they are. They're completely separate entities. Or do we want to actually have agents that are not just, you know, glorified police officers? We have to have an understanding of the counterintelligence realm. And we're getting raked over the coals by, you know, the Chinese and the Russians and the Saudis and the Pakistanis because we don't know this. And there's a lot of mistakes being made because of that.
We're going to pause for just a second. When we come back, we'll talk with more about the failure to understand the threat and what is necessary to remedy that situation, as well as a bit more on what is unfolding in terms of the Strzok and McCabe and Page affair. That and more with John Guandolo right after this.
Visit us at facebook.com/securefreedom with Frank Gaffney. You're listening to Secure Freedom Radio with Frank Gaffney from the nation's capital in Washington, D.C.
Welcome back for the second installment of a very special edition of Secure Freedom Radio, talking with one of my favorite people, John Guandolo, a Marine, a former FBI special agent, now doing incredibly important work under the banner of an organization he founded called Understanding the Threat, designed to try to help our law enforcement personnel, among others, do just that. John, just before we leave the current malaise, if I can call it that, of the FBI, what's going to be needed to turn things around there? As you say, there are lots of good people who are trying to do the job we need them desperately to do. But is it just a question of getting rid of Andrew McCabe, or does there need to be a more widespread and rigorous house cleaning with respect to people who have exhibited the same kind of, incompetent, if not malfeasant, management?
Okay, so there's two pieces to that answer, if I might. The first is, I think it needs to be a much deeper house cleaning. I mean, it's 2018, and we've got a massive Marxist movement in the United States, a massive Islamic movement in the United States, neither of which the FBI is addressing in any substantial way, and even any non-substantial way, quite frankly.
To say nothing of the partnership of the two in the what we call red-green axis here.
Exactly. And not only is the Bureau not helping, as we understand the threat, just released a video. If you just go to YouTube, type in Understanding the Threat, the first video that we have there demonstrates the not only incompetence, but the fact that senior FBI leadership, including Director Mueller, when he was the director, was directly aiding and abetting terrorists. And that's what the video is meant to show. So I think since you have people in leadership at the unit chief level at headquarters, the assistant director level, the EAD, they need to all go too, because it means they have not addressed this at all. And not only have they not addressed it, they are aiding and abetting, providing material support to known, easily identifiable al-Qaeda and Hamas operatives. The example in the video is you've got the Dar al-Hijra Mosque in Falls Church, Virginia, where the founding members, the founders, the imams, the presidents of the board, members of the board, and fundraisers have direct links to Hamas, al-Qaeda, and certainly the Muslim Brotherhood, but most to Hamas and al-Qaeda. And there you have in the video, then we cut over, and this is from 2017, the executive assistant director, Paul Abate, glorifying these people in this mosque and explaining how we know that you have nothing to do with violence and terrorism. And then the lead jihadi imam saying, I got a call on my cell phone from the FBI director, and it was during a time frame, 2012, when it was Director Mueller, and he tells the story. This is just, it's beyond catastrophic failure. It's sedition. It's materially supporting terrorism. And that's at the senior levels. And I can tell you, you look at the training, you look at the intelligence collection, those people who are leading those entities all need to go. And I would argue a good look needs to be done to see if there can be criminal prosecution.
Wow. This is, the sort of thing that I believe many of us are probably sensing. But John, you've had firsthand experience of it. And going back to what you said a moment ago in terms of your efforts to try to put together a serious and realistic program for training agents, in the nature of the enemy, specifically these Islamists, these Sharia supremacists, you found not only, as I recall, the excuse that there wasn't the budget for this, but also your program fell afoul, if I'm not mistaken, of what came to be known as the purge, did it not? The effort by the Obama administration was actually a big part of this, but it was the second phase of the purge. The first phase was the Bush administration, George W. Bush. Talk a little bit about your experiences in that period and what it did to the Bureau in your judgment.
Well, in 2006, after a few years of working terrorism cases and realizing there's a massive Islamic movement in the United States, primarily led by the Brotherhood, and coming to that knowledge through evidence and facts that we had done through investigation, I put together in the summer of 2006 the very first training program in the government on these matters, on Sharia, on the Islamic movement, and what people can do. And you know, I invited you into that on the first day to be a part of that. And it was an incredible program that all the students said everyone in the government and all law enforcement needs to have this program. Well, it was not really welcome because the individuals and the organizations we were pointing out that are hostile were the leaders of those organizations were working inside the Bush administration with FBI, CIA leaders, with the Pentagon, and it created in the government real friction because we were calling out some truths there.
And to the extent that that was the case, what I think I certainly have learned over the years, John, and you've done much of the teaching, is that indeed those individuals were inside the government as part of a much more comprehensive civilization jihad, as the Muslim Brotherhood calls it. Talk a little bit about what we know about the civilization jihad and how it's manifested itself beyond placing operatives, some of whom were, you know, doing business as an imam of a mosque founded by the Muslim Brotherhood, some of whom were academics, some of whom were, you know, business people and what have you, but all of whom seem to embrace and seek to advance this Sharia supremacist program that the Brotherhood is all about.
Well, thank you for the opportunity. What we know is dating back to the, well, we can go all the way back, but dating back to the 1980s, when the FBI's Indianapolis office had an open case on the Islamic Society of North America and literally wanting to indict them and being turned down by headquarters, all the way through when I did those training programs and even coming forward today, the evidence is there's no lack of evidence that there is an Islamic movement in the United States, that it's primarily led by the Brotherhood, that all of the prominent Islamic organizations in the United States are part of it. They established the very first national Islamic organization in the U.S., meaning the Muslim Brotherhood did, in 1963, the Muslim Student Associations. When the Holy Land Foundation for Relief and Development was indicted right after 9/11 in Dallas, Texas, 2001, it was the largest Islamic charity in America, and it was a Muslim Brotherhood organization. Specifically, it was a terrorist organization. It was Hamas. And when you look at the information we have from evidence, from their own documents, from testimony, and from investigation, we see that it's the Muslim Brotherhood that builds the Muslim community in the United States. And as we get to today, you know, as about a year and a half ago, the guy who ran the Combating Terrorism and Technical Support Office for the Pentagon said on a national radio program that the Muslim Brotherhood controls the national security decision-making process as it relates to Islamic terrorism. And the way they intend to win the war is exactly that, to control how our leaders understand the threat.
And we cannot defeat an enemy we do not understand, needless to say, as Sun Tzu points out. John, we have to pause for just a second. We'll be right back with more. We'll talk about one of the organizations John's referred to, the Council on American-Islamic Relations, which is, as he says, simply a front for a terrorist organization known as Hamas. That and more with John Guandola right after this.
Now more with Frank Gaffney.
Welcome back. John Guandola, the president and founder of Understanding the Threat, is in the house virtually with us for a full hour of conversation about some of his insights and exploits in trying to contend with the threats of our time. John, I did want to come back to something you alluded to earlier about this organization best known as CARE, but its full name is the Council on American-Islamic Relations. As you know, we published a book here at the center, edited by my colleague Kyle Scheidler, that basically stitches together the highlights of wiretaps that were done by the FBI and the testimony about those wiretaps, what it meant and its significance in connection with the Holy Land Foundation trial. It's entitled CARE is Hamas, has some annotations by Kyle that brings it up to date. But I would like you to just spend a moment talking about what all of this information demonstrates in terms of the genesis, as well as the ongoing mission of CARE on behalf of the Muslim Brotherhood.
Well, we, as you know, on our website, Understand the Threat, have a block on our homepage that says CARE is Hamas, which also takes snippets of evidence for somebody to do a quick purview to realize there is a lot of meat on this. But to summarize, the U.S. Muslim Brotherhood, on the command from the International Muslim Brotherhood, created the U.S. Palestine Committee, which is Hamas in the United States. And the U.S. Muslim Brotherhood's Palestine Committee created three organizations, one of which was Holy Land Foundation. In 1994, after the 93 meeting in Philadelphia of Hamas leaders, as identified by the FBI, that all the members were Hamas, including the founders of CARE, who were present at that meeting, they come out and in 1994 create CARE. The other three organizations end up getting shut down and indicted, and CARE is the fourth one, and the U.S. government identifies them as being a member of the U.S. Palestine Committee, which is Hamas, and they say their mission is to support Hamas, to raise recruits, money, and propaganda for Hamas, which is a designated terrorist organization. So what they've done is taken a name, CARE, and put it over like a mask over Hamas. The evidence is very clear. They raise, if you just read their website, they raise money directly for terrorism, which is jihad. Now, they don't use those terms, but if you understand what they're saying when they say they raise zakat money for the seventh category in Islamic law, that's for Islamic military operations. So anyway, it's very clear who they are and what they're doing. Their key influence right now is really important because the guy who is the leader of Hamas in the United States, Nihad Awad, our professional assessment is he's also the leader of the Muslim Brotherhood in the United States, and he is guiding them strategically, and they are building an army of lawyers to come after organizations and individuals that try to take, including DOJ and the administration, for any action they take. They are pushing forward a massive propaganda campaign, and they are organizing at the national, regional, and local level, every mosque in the United States. So it is they are really on the move right now. And again, FBI is doing zero to counter their efforts.
The point that you've made, I find it very compelling, is that when you add all of this up, the degree to which this kind of civilization jihad is being waged against us, the failure of our government and for that matter, other institutions to understand it, let alone counteract it, and the emboldening of these Sharia supremacists that is their not surprising takeaway from this situation gives rise to a circumstance that is, if not already upon us, imminent of an insurgency. Talk a little bit about that as a proposition and what it means in terms of a counterinsurgency that is clearly needed.
Well, if you just look at the entire movement, they have thousands of organizations working, well-funded, working together to fulfill their objective of establishing an Islamic state under Sharia. That's what they say. So when you do an analysis of it, it's not that difficult. They're clear in what they want. When you look at the Marxist movement, you go to the Freedom Road Socialist Organization or Communist Party USA or many of these other groups, and their websites say they've got to overthrow the government, the colonialist United States, in order to impose Marxism and communism, socialism on the United States. And then when we see these two movements working together to advance the cause, the Marxists being a tool for the Islamic movement, although I think they believe, based on what they're doing, they think it's a partnership. This creates a massive threat to the United States. It is an insurgency when we can track both Marxists and Islamic organizations working directly with local school boards in the interfaith outreach movement that's controlled by the key Muslim Brotherhood organizations. You look at chambers of commerce, you look at what they're doing on American campuses. You've got Hamas, Muslim Brotherhood organizations, leftist organizations operating. When you look at, in the law enforcement realm, who law enforcement's relying on, and all areas, who the media uses, in many cases, care, and they define them as a civil rights group when in fact the government identified them as being a part of the Muslim Brothers Palestine Committee, which is Hamas. You just look at this entire picture. It's a massive insurgency here, and in a counterinsurgency, the tip of the spear is the local police officer. And it's why we've built, understanding the threat, has built a strategy for the local community, the county, the city, and the state to combat this. And we're the only ones in the country giving citizens and police the ability to identify jihadis and identify jihadi and Marxist organizations. And the strategy at the local level to where you can prosecute them and create a investigative strategy and also a statewide strategy to actually dismantle these networks. And it needs to be aggressive. It needs to be firm, but you can do this legally. And the reason this is so important is because at the federal level, as we've just articulated, the FBI is truly broken catastrophically. The intelligence apparatus in the United States at that level is broken catastrophically. And while Mr. Trump himself may understand a portion of this threat, he's surrounded by people that do not. So it truly is up to citizens and local officials and as we say, sheriffs and pastors, to take the fight to the enemy at the local level. And understanding the threat, we are giving them the strategies to do that. It's critical to winning the overall war.
Yeah, and you mentioned very briefly earlier the kind of response you got to your training inside the FBI when you were able to do a little of that. How has it been received now that you're doing it for these law enforcement organizations around the country from outside the government?
Well, the response to our training universally is, one, people that are in the training will say, including when we have FBI, JTTF people and other federal agencies, but local and state police, Fusion Center people, analysts, they will say, number one, we've never heard this information. Number two, it's critical to protecting our community, and we need it. We have sheriffs, police chiefs, and prosecutors who are on standby to talk to other sheriffs, police chiefs, and prosecutors who have been through the training, their people have been through the training, and they will say these things. Number one, this training directly has led to our organization, meaning whatever sheriffs, that jurisdiction, they have opened cases, investigations directly based on our training. In one case, we have a police chief who, within 6 days of one of his guys coming to our training, because of the training, went the extra effort to engage an individual to create reasonable suspicion, to get his ID, to run it, and it turned out to be an Al-Qaeda guy wanted by the FBI that they had lost track of.
Wow. John, hold the thought. This is incredibly important, and we will discuss more about it and other topics right after this with John Guandolo. Straight ahead.
Go to securefreedomradio.org today. It's your freedom. It's your country. Frank Gaffney's Secure Freedom Radio. Go to securefreedomradio.org today. It's your freedom. It's your country. Frank Gaffney's Secure Freedom Radio.
John Guandolo is the president and founder of Understanding the Threat. We've been talking about the kind of work it is doing. You can check it out at understandingthethreat.com. And John, I just did want to ask you, in addition to the kind of positive feedback that you've gotten from the recipients of your information in these training sessions for federal, state, and local law enforcement, you have gotten a positive review of a very different kind, I guess you might say, from the Council on American-Islamic Relations. Talk about the lengths to which it has gone to stop you from providing this training to those in the pointy end of the spear, as you say, of the counterinsurgency.
Well, it's really interesting, and I'll relate it through a story. I'm actually in the middle of conducting a lengthy week-long train-the-trainer program, which we are conducting right now, and I have a sheriff who is here. We have a former police chief here. We've got a member of the media, and we've got citizens that are already engaged in this, and a police officer, and it's really fantastic. The stories that they've all shared. When I went to, for the first time, kind of taking this whole program, doing a one-day program in Arizona in September 2014, you had 75 Marxist and jihadi organizations from around the United States write a letter to President Obama's CT advisor, Lisa Monaco, telling her that she needed to shut down me and my organization and our training. This was 6 weeks before this training in Arizona. And then leading up to it, you had the ACLU screaming that this needed to be shut down. And you had the Council on American Islamic Relations, national local media, saying this had to be shut down. It's terrible. Here's the interesting thing. At the end of the one-day training, where 300 police officers came from all over the state of Arizona, at the end, 100% of them said, we've never heard the information, including three dozen JTTF, Joint Terrorism Task Force people. And you had all of them say, this is critical to protecting the community. In Virginia, when we did a similar thing, we did the three-day program, you had a sheriff who literally was not only visited by Ibrahim Hooper and Corey Saylor of the national leaders of Hamas in the United States doing business as CARE, who tried to shut it down with local Islamic leaders. The local Islamic leaders with CARE in the room offered to pay $15,000 if he would just shut the training program down. Now, these leaders from the Islamic community in rural Virginia don't even have a mosque. There's about 20 of them, and they meet in a home. So we know they don't have the money. We know the obvious investigative connection would be Hamas doing business as CARE. Likely we're going to be the ones to fund this. That's how much they want to shut this down.
These are classic influence operations, aren't they? John, let me ask you, of course, this evening the president is speaking to the Congress about the State of the Union. He ran for president, and I personally think it had a lot to do with him getting elected as president on a platform calling for clarity about the nature of the enemy we're facing. He specifically used the term radical Islamic terrorism, but he has, in the years since, been clearly discouraged from using that term or really even talking about the ideological character of what causes the threat of terrorism. It will be very interesting to see whether in his speech tonight he uses the terms that got him to office, or the thin gruel, shall we say, that H.R. McMaster and others have been encouraging on him since he came to office. I wanted you to just talk us through that, especially in light of the curious thing that in the national security strategy, which H.R. McMaster, you know, presided over, its preparation, that is, some of that original character of the Trump thinking and policies seems to have crept back in. Are we seeing a change in this regard, do you think? Are we witnessing, from what you're observing and interacting with these law enforcement officers and what you're doing as you monitor what's going on in the Department of Homeland Security and elsewhere, a course correction of the kind that the president promised and that seems, especially on basis of what you've told us today, so clearly needed?
There have been some positive movements, but overall, not much of a course correction. You know, February after the president was elected, we have senior Muslim Brotherhood officials in an Egyptian newspaper describing the efforts they made to influence members of Congress with the help of Mrs. Clinton and people close to her to fund a propaganda campaign in the United States to keep the president from designating the Muslim Brotherhood. We have the spokesman for the International Muslim Brotherhood who's in jail, who we know worked for 5.5 years on the Clinton Foundation, and it overlapped the time he was actually working as a spokesman for the Muslim Brotherhood's candidate, Morsi, who became the Muslim Brotherhood candidate and president of Egypt. So all of that is in play. So there are other forces going on that I'm very clear this administration is not attuned to. Here are a couple victories that are small but still noteworthy. I mean, the State Department, the White House didn't host iftar dinners, which is run by the Muslim Brotherhood. When General Kelly was at DHS, he cut off a grant to the Muslim Brotherhood's Muslim Public Affairs Council for over $500,000. That's taxpayer money going to our enemy. So those are good things. However, we still have not substantially hit the enemy. And I want to make sure your listeners understand, when the plaintiff, who's the Imam of the Islamic Association of Hawaii, came against the president and his executive order to stop immigration from hostile countries, the Islamic Association of Hawaii is a Muslim Brotherhood front. The Imam is a Muslim brother. That's the Muslim Brotherhood directly confronting the president of the United States. And instead of the next day that place getting indicted and hammered, nothing.
Let me just ask you in closing, John, to just make your best case that this is a practice we can't tolerate any longer, that things have reached a pass, that what you've described as a conspiracy, a seditious conspiracy of that, is of now such a mortal peril to this country that it must be dealt with very differently and with a clear-eyed understanding of the nature of the threat.
As I said in the beginning, this is a war of narratives. They want to control the message. Currently, they do control the message, both the Marxists and the Islamic movements. The answer to that is speaking boldly, truth, boldly, using very clear language. So, for instance, instead of saying fake news, we need to call it what it is. What the news media corporations and their reporters are doing is a hostile propaganda information campaign as a part of a larger movement, the Marxist movement, assisting the jihadi movement. And so these people doing this should be investigated for that. And the enemy is so far down the road in this, they believe they're in their final phase. We need to address them at every level, local, state, national, in the financial realm, the economic warfare realm, the legal realm, the military realm, counter the subversion in the counterintelligence realm. We just had one of the biggest penetrations in Congress with the Iran case, and it is as if nothing happened. We lost the wars in Afghanistan and Iraq, and our military is treating it like no big deal. I mean, these are clear evidences that what we're saying and of the threat and how it's manifesting are real and present, and there's much more going on.
Check it out, folks, at understandingthethreat.com. John Guandolo, your work is tremendously appreciated, as has been your previous service to our country. I know you will keep it up, and I hope you will come back to us often in 2018. Thank you for your extended time today. God bless you, my friend. Carry on. I hope the rest of you will join us again tomorrow, same time, same station. Until then, this is Frank Affney. Thanks for listening.
From the nation's capital, you've been listening to Secure Freedom Radio with Frank Gaffney.